Hi, and welcome. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Network. I'm your host, Lee Merriweather with Pet Honoring, and here to help with all aspects of honoring our pets and our relationship with them. Hey, and welcome. Thanks for joining us. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Lee Merriweather, and we have an exciting show today. We have two wonderful guests. The first is Nancy Kay, who is an award-winning author. Her book, Speaking for Spot, we'll be talking about today. And the second guest is an animal communicator, Cindy Smith. And she is going to be talking with us about communicating with your animal and telling us all about that. So wanted to first welcome Nancy. Nancy Kay, welcome to the show.
Hi, Lee. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you doing today?
Very well, thanks.
Wonderful. You have this wonderful book out there called Speaking for Spot, and this is the best healthcare book for you and your dog. And I understand that this came about through your own personal experience. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. And just for your listeners' sake, so that they know that I'm also a veterinarian. So
yes,
it's a book written by a veterinarian on health issues. Really, the way that this book got started was through one of my own experiences. I had a breast cancer scare, and I spent about 3 months with conflicting about what I had was cancerous or wasn't cancerous. And through my own medical advocacy skills, I sought out someone who really was the expert on breast cancer in women, and he was able to reassure me that I had absolutely nothing to worry about, and explain to me why other people, other physicians were concerned about what was going on and were conflicted. So by being my own best medical advocate, I was able to avoid an unnecessary surgical procedure, and I came out of the whole experience with the notion that I'd really like to give others without medical training, like I have, the gift of being able to be their own best medical advocate.
Sure.
So that's how Speaking for Spot was born.
Wonderful. So you transferred the same skills that you learned when dealing with your own medical issue and kind of navigating the medical system to the everyday person and how you can do this for your pet.
Exactly. And in fact, some of my readers have told me that because it's all the same principles regardless of species, that they've been able to use what I've guided them with in Speaking for Spot for their own health issues.
Wow. Wow. So not only is it beneficial, it's kind of just a general, you know, how do you talk to doctors and how do you get where you need to be?
Correct. It's the process of gathering information, learning about all of the options, and then asking appropriate questions. And asking the appropriate questions, gathering information, can sometimes be a daunting task because of that, what we refer to as a white coat intimidation factor. And
sure.
So I do a lot of coaching on how to go ahead and talk with your doctor, to have honest dialogue with your doctor or your veterinarian.
All right. So what's the single best tip for doing that?
Well, I think the single best tip is to say what's more important, my feelings, my dog or cat's health. And when you look at it that way, you say, really, nothing's more important than my pet's health. So I'm going to do what it takes to get the job done.
Yeah. Yeah, really putting it in perspective and going, okay, you know, this is what I need to know, or this is what I need help with in dealing with this issue.
It's not easy. I provide in the book a lot of conversation starters to get the ball rolling.
Okay.
You know, it's because people often just are kind of flummoxed, not knowing what to say or how to say it.
Yeah. And how do we deal with, say you don't know what you need to know. So where do you start with that?
Well, ideally that truthfully begins with finding a veterinarian who is all about presenting options and the various pros and cons of differing options. If you have a veterinarian, if you're working with a veterinarian that says you should, you need to, volunteers, this is what I would do if this were my animal without being asked, then you're probably dealing with a veterinarian who practices more paternalistically, kind of the old-fashioned Marcus Welby MD style.
Okay.
And ideally what you want is someone who practices what we call relationship-centered care, which means that they're very willing and motivated to discuss all the options regardless of cost and the pros and cons of those various options. And then
right.
then you can take the time to digest all of that information and do your own research. I give a lot of tips for being a responsible internet surfer. There's nothing wrong with consulting with Dr. Google as long as one does it in a responsible fashion.
And what would that entail?
Meaning responsible surfing?
Yeah, sorry, yes.
Yeah, there's a few different tips that I give. One is if the website you're at is trying to sell something, a product.
You're chopping up a little bit. I'm having a little bit hard time hearing you. The last thing I got was if the website was selling something, then maybe that is a website that to be a little skeptical of. Is that correct?
Correct. I would disregard any information that they provide.
Okay, just disregard it totally. Okay, that's good
tip. The second tip is to plug in the topic that you're wanting to research, followed by the words veterinary college or veterinary school.
Ah,
and that's going to
okay.
take you to sites that are going to provide reliable information.
Okay, so go to the educational institutes.
Correct, and certainly ask your veterinarian for their recommendations on websites as well.
Okay, that's a good thought. What about the .orgs? Do you have any thought on those?
Yeah, I think that .orgs are probably going to be more objective in the information that they provide. So
okay.
I would cross-check the information gathered there with other sources of information.
Okay, wonderful. I know that you cover a lot in your book, and it is very detailed. There's some great tips and things to think about with your pet. What was the biggest obstacle in writing your book?
The biggest obstacle was finding a publisher. And it's now a print-on-demand publication process through Amazon, which is far easier. But, yeah, finding someone who, you know, publishers, they're like the district attorney's office. They don't want to gamble on much. They really want to
right.
feel certain that they have a sure thing before they invest in it. So I was
right.
fortunate to find a publisher, but it took about a year to do so.
Interesting. It seems, you know, I mean, the book has obviously done really well, and it's just packed full of great information. So that's interesting that, you know, that was an obstacle there. All right. So as far as the medical decisions, you have a lot in here about navigating that, and you've given us some good tips. First and foremost, finding a good vet. Anything else you want to tell us about that? One that has one you can talk to, obviously.
Right. Yeah, we talked about styles of communication. I encourage people to set up interviews with veterinarians to feel like it's a good fit, not only for them but for their pet.
Wow, I didn't even know you could do that.
Absolutely. And some veterinarians will do it at no charge. Others will charge an office visit fee, but I certainly think it's worth it. I encourage people to hang out at the dog park. People there love talking about their veterinarian. You can kind of get a consensus one way or another of who leaves a favorable impression, who doesn't. In terms
okay.
of medical quality, one of the tips I provide in the book is going to a local emergency clinic because they see cases from all the different veterinarians in the community. And what you can do is go in and just be very upfront and honest. It helps if you have a platter of home-baked goodies in your hands and just ask
right.
the folks at the front desk, you know, I'm looking for a veterinarian in this community. Can you give me a few? And here's my priority. I really want a very high-quality practice of medicine. And if you ask them to give you one, they're a little fussy about that. But if you ask them to provide you with a few names of a few different veterinarians, for a few clicks, they're usually willing to do that.
Wonderful. That's a great idea. And so when they give us the name of a few vets and we set up an interview with them, you know, what would we ask them?
In the book, there's a lengthy list of questions to ask.
Okay.
And there's some real deal breakers to be watching or listening for. For example, you can ask about their vaccination protocols. And if they say that they give distemper parvovirus vaccinations annually to adult dogs, that's a deal breaker. You can end the interview right there. Because
okay.
What we now know is that our dogs need that vaccination no more than once every 3 years. But approximately 60% of veterinarians still cling to giving them annually, which makes no sense to me. The only possible reasons I can come up with for doing that would be that they really don't know, which means that they're not current. This information
right.
has been out for over a decade. Or that they want the income that the annual vaccines provide. So
right.
You can ask a question such as that. You can ask a question is about who do you refer cases to. Not every veterinarian can handle everything. And if they say, oh, I handle everything myself, you know, you don't want to be dealing with 100% do-it-yourselfer. You want to know that they work with a team of specialists so that if there's something beyond their skill level, their capabilities, they're very willing to refer you to the best.
Wow. Okay. This is some great tips and ideas on finding the right and the best vet for you. So well, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with Nancy Kay, and we're talking about her award-winning book, Speaking for Spot, and navigating, communicating, you know, with your veterinarian, and we'll be right back. Hi, and welcome. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Network, and here to help with all aspects of honoring our pets and our relationship with them. Honor Your Pet understands that pets are our family and honors our relationship with them and all they give. The website is pethonoring.com, and the email address is pets@pethonoring.com. Let me know what you need and how I can help. All right, we're back with Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Ellie Merriweather, and we are here with Dr. Nancy Kay, award-winning author, speaking for Spot, and longtime veterinarian. And we are talking about how to chat with your veterinarian, how to be a medical advocate for your pet. And her book is just full of wonderful tips. And one of the things that was impressive was reading that you need to take responsibility. You know, like I, as a pet owner, am responsible. And so tell us about some of our responsibilities with getting great medical care for our pets.
Sure. And you know, I will preface that by saying that the reason that people need to step up to the plate and be their pet's medical advocate. One is somebody needs to do it, but more importantly, the person who lives in their lives round the clock with that pet, they know that pet better than anyone else. They know that
right.
pet's habit. They know what sort of treatment that pet really emotionally can endure. The way I view it is the person who lives with that animal is really the team captain. The veterinarian is a member of the healthcare team, but we, the people who share our lives, open our hearts and our homes to these pets, we're the team captains. And
yeah.
so what that responsibility involves is getting good preventive medical care, so vaccinating appropriately, picking and choosing which vaccinations make sense and which ones don't. Heartworm prevention is a must for every dog and every cat, regardless of whether they're mostly indoors or not.
Even cats?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Wow,
cats
okay.
are also susceptible to heartworm disease.
Sure.
So preventive care, and then when disease arises, and it will, it absolutely will. None of us get through life scot-free without that happening. Then stepping
yeah.
up to the plate as your pet's medical advocate to make sure that your pet is getting appropriate care that's suitable for your pet's needs. I can give you the example. Let's say that we have a little couch potato chihuahua and a very active herding border collie, and both dogs develop heart failure, and restriction of activity is a significant treatment for heart failure. Well, that might be suitable for the chihuahua. It might not be at all suitable for the border collie.
Yeah.
And that person might opt for quality of life rather than quantity of life. So being an informed consumer of veterinary medicine is a big responsibility, taking the time to get the information you need to make good medical decisions for your pets. And lastly, Lee, which, you know, you and I, that's how our paths came together, is that probably 95 to 99% of the time, a decision is necessary in terms of end-of-life decision-making, because it's
right.
Very rarely that pets pass away peacefully in their sleep. And so then that's often the most difficult decisions to be made, euthanasia versus hospice care, and when all that should happen. But that, too, is an incumbent responsibility.
Yeah, I think a lot of times we don't want to think about that, and we push it away, and we do ourselves a disservice by not preparing for it.
Right. It's the price we pay for falling in love with these pets. And
yes.
It's such an important important thing to think about that I've got a whole chapter and speaking for Spot devoted solely to that.
Yeah, you do a very nice job with that as well. And I love the section, the Ten Commandments of office visits.
Yeah, you know, that's just a way of getting the most out of your office visit. And there's several things in there that are just tips and pointers. The first one is pushing your veterinarian off the pedestal. The pedestal is usually a figment of the client's imagination, but if you're putting your veterinarian up on a pedestal, it's very difficult to have open, honest dialogue. To be able
yeah.
to say, boy, I'm really worried about putting my pet under anesthesia. How can you reassure me? Or to be able to say, I'd love to do that, but I really can't afford that. How shall we proceed? And then
yeah.
there's other tips, such as to not be distracted while you're in the office visit. Put the cell phones away.
Put the cell away. Put the laptop away.
Yes. Have all the major decision makers in the room. So if you're about to embark upon a really significant decision, such as whether or not your pet should have surgery, make sure that everyone who is going to be involved in the decision making is in the room. It also helps if you're going into a discussion on a rather emotional topic. Let's say that your pet has just been diagnosed with cancer and you're going to be discussing treatment options, is to have a second set of eyes and ears in the room, especially
yeah.
if it can be someone with medical background, so that they can debrief with you after the office visit and kind of walk you through all the information, because it's tough to hear everything when you're in an emotional state.
Yeah, yeah, that's a wonderful tip and perspective. And I think one that we probably don't think about a lot to help us better prepare. And, you know, the first point you touched on, you know, taking your vet off of the pedestal, I think is huge. And I know that, you know, I've fallen into that pattern of going, okay, well, this person's the expert. I don't have a right to ask questions or feel very awkward, you know, bringing up things.
Right.
And getting past that and going, okay, you know, so I think that's huge. And,
right.
you know, not being distracted as well.
Right. And I encourage remembering that the team captain idea, you know, that you're sort of the captain of the ship. You have to drive the ship.
Yeah.
So you should be able to talk with your veterinarian openly, candidly. And if,
yeah.
if it's just not a personality match where you can do that, then maybe find a different veterinarian where you feel more comfortable with that.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think even just realizing that you're the captain of the ship really helps put you in that perspective and in that role going, oh, okay, you know, yeah, this is how, you know, what I need to do. And I think that's
uh-huh.
a beautiful perspective. So what about, you know, second opinions? How do we know, you know, is that okay? Are veterinarians okay with that?
So the title of the chapter in my book about that is A Second Opinion is Always Okay.
Excellent.
And there's a lot of different reasons for getting second opinions. One is if what you're dealing with is really complicated and you might want to visit with a specialist. Let's say that your cat or dog has been diagnosed with heart disease. Maybe it would be wise to go see a veterinarian who specializes in cardiology for a second opinion. And maybe that second opinion will do nothing but reassure you that your family veterinarian is doing everything just right. Well, that's really worth it for your own peace of mind.
Sure.
I strongly encourage second opinions when what you're hearing doesn't make good sense to you. Or if your pet is not improving in spite of having visited your veterinarian two or three times, or if your pet is getting worse. You know, my specialty is internal medicine, and what's heartbreaking to me is when someone comes in and it's too late. It's too late. Had I been able to get a hold of that pet two or three months ago, I would have been able to make a significant difference. And I see in the medical record that they stuck with their family veterinarian for 10, 15 visits without their pet getting better before perhaps a friend or a neighbor or relative suggested wanted to go see a specialist. And that's a heartbreaking situation. So the second opinion would have been helpful, but it's too late.
Right. I think that's a lot of good things to think about there.
What gets in the way of getting second opinions for some people is that they don't have, they're very concerned about hurting their relationship with their own veterinarian or hurting their veterinarian's feelings. And once again, I have to say what's more important, your veterinarian's feelings or the health of your pet. But because it's a difficult, awkward situation, again, I provide a lot of conversation starters to get the conversation rolling when you're discussing second opinions with your family veterinarian.
Yeah, and I think that's a huge piece of it is, you know, how do you get to that point? And, you know, what tools you can use. And that's one of the reasons I love your book and the message and, you know, everything in it.
Thanks.
So what do you want people most to know about caring for their pets?
I think that the thing that's really important to know is to trust yourself and trust your good intentions as they revolve around your pet. That really no one knows your animal as well as you do.
Yeah.
And so when it comes to the really tough decisions, it's good that you're in the driver's seat in terms of making choices, because when you step up to the plate as your pet's medical advocate, first and foremost, you're likely to provide the best possible care for your specific pet. And secondly, you are most likely going to provide the greatest long-term peace of mind for yourself. I led a pet loss support group for many years, and many people got stuck in the grief process because they euthanized their pet because their veterinarian thought that it was time. And yet they knew in their heart of hearts, based on their knowledge of their pet, that it really wasn't time yet, but they followed their veterinarian's instructions. And so when you relinquish that notion of, I know what's best for my pet, you often pay for it, as does your pet.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I love that. Trust yourself. And I think that's something that we can all, you know, work on and really embody. So I love that. Well, thank you. This is Dr. Nancy Kay. Tell people if they want to get a hold of you, get the book, or read more about you, where do they go?
Ah, thanks. The best place would be my website, which is www.speakingforspot.com. And if you sign up for my on my email list, you'll get a copy of my weekly blog post, which deals with all sorts of medical advocacy issues and a whole variety of different diseases. So it's an easy way to learn. Just get an email from me once a week with my most recent blog post.
Excellent. Excellent. I love that. I know a lot of the listeners out there will want to go there. It's an excellent book. Thank you for joining us. We hope to have
you're
back.
So welcome.
This is Dr. Nancy Kay, veterinarian, award-winning author, speaking for Spot. Thank you so much for being here. We're going to take a short break, and when we're back, we're going to chat with Cindy Smith, professional animal communicator. Thank you, Dr. Kay.
Thank you, Lee. And tell Cindy, your next guest, that I say hello.
Awesome. Will do.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Hi, and welcome. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Network, and here to help with all aspects of honoring our pets and our relationship with them. Honor Your Pet understands that pets are our family and honors our relationship with them and all they give. The website is pethonoring.com, and the email address is pets@pethonoring.com. Let me know what you need and how I can help. All right, welcome back. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Ellie Merriweather, and we are here with our second guest. This is professional animal communicator Cindy Smith. Her website is animalsmith.com, and we're going to be finding out more about this animal communication. Welcome, Cindy.
Thank you, Lee, for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us. Tell us, you know, I know a lot of our listeners out there have heard about animal communication, but maybe they haven't experienced it or don't know, you know, a lot about it. So tell us, you know, a simple definition of it and how it works.
Well, I think of it as a mental connection with the animal or just a shifting of frequencies. We all have the ability. But I feel like my job as the communicator is to translate for the animal.
Okay.
So it can be used in many different ways, but it's really just a shift of focus and kind of concentration on the animal. And then I also explain it as if they're speaking Spanish and I'm speaking English and I'm translating for their person, what they have to say.
Okay. All right. So you can tap into how they communicate. You can communicate like they communicate.
Yes, and depends on the animal. Some of them have a great vocabulary because they live in a home and use their people's vocabulary because they've been talked to a lot, or they may be an animal who is a little more identified with nature, and they use mostly images, feelings. So you may get words, images, or feelings.
Okay. And so, as I understand it, animal communication, animals, like you said, they use images and feelings, and that's how they communicate even with each other.
Right, absolutely. And across species, the communication is always going on.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And so you said, and I want to touch on this a little bit, that we all have this ability, it's just kind of diminished.
Yeah, I think what's happened is as we have evolved into using a verbal language and also a written language, we can type, we have a variety of ways of communicating. We've just let that telepathic, intuitive language diminish. I think it's always there, and we can tap back into it, but it's just we've chosen a different mode of communicating.
Okay. And so I know there are going to be listeners out there who go, okay, well, I think it's kind of hooey. What would you say to them?
I would say it's pretty natural to be skeptical about anything that you haven't experienced.
Sure.
And this does have kind of a... what is the word? Out there.
Abstract, maybe.
Connotation. Exactly. And yet, it's really just that it's subtle. So I think that the proof that animal communication is working is whether a communicator picks up some sort of physical concern with the animal. While we are certainly not veterinarians, we will often send people to their vet if an animal explains that they're in pain or gives us a symptom. So to me, the proof is that you get backup from the vet that was what was going on. Or often we're talking about behavioral changes, and when you see the behavioral change as a result of the conversation, I think that's where the proof is. So less theoretical and more practical.
Okay, so it's the results, or, you know, I know when I use an animal communicator, and it's what's happening during the session also, and it's how I feel, and sometimes I just feel it and know it and see the results.
Absolutely, and often the conversation confirms the fact that you were already tuned into your animal.
Right.
And you were sensing, because... it's a heart connection, and we love our animals. So we are picking up a lot of information in our relationship with them.
We're just not aware of it a lot of times, I think. I mean, we're aware of it,
subtle.
But we're not tuned in that way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so tell us what a session is like.
There are a lot of different uses for communication. So let me just run through the little list of things that you might be doing and then give you a little quick sample.
Sure.
Lots of times it's to clear up confusion in the family, whether it's the addition of another family member, whether that's you're bringing a puppy home or you're bringing a baby home. Sometimes it's explanations about going on a vacation, about
okay.
changes that are happening in the family. So an example of a conversation I had this morning was a client called, and she was moving two kitties into her home temporarily and wanted her cat to know what was going on so that no one was surprised, so that the integration of a new animal can be much smoother.
Okay.
So usually go ahead, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Usually they call, my people call with a list of questions or with an agenda, and then I will get whoever it is we're talking to on the line, so to speak, will verify that I am talking to them, and then we will jump into the conversation, and then again, it's kind of a back and forth communication, clearing up things, the animals ask clarifying questions, their people give them the answers.
Okay. And so with the example that you gave, you were able to chat with this cat and say, tell the cat, you know, these two kittens are going to come in, and but it's temporary, and just letting you know what's going on.
Yeah, so that he didn't have to get all riled up and protect his territory. Instead,
right.
he would know that those kitties would be there for 4 nights, and then they'd be leaving.
Yeah, and that probably reduces a lot of, you know, stress and worry and anxiety on the pet's part and the person.
Absolutely. So often it's just that we forget to tell our animals what the plan is, and there they are just watching things unfold, where if they have a heads up before time, they can be relaxed with whatever the transition is.
Wonderful. Okay, so animal communication sessions a lot of times are used to let a pet know what's going on, whether it's another pet in the household or maybe a move or a new baby or a new family member or sometimes maybe even just to check in with them and see. That's what a lot of times I use them for, you know, how are you and what's going on, and check in, see what they need.
Yeah, I think they feel honored by those conversations, the check-in conversations. They know they have a voice. And that you care for them that deeply that you want to hear what they have to say.
Yeah. Yeah, and I know firsthand that it has really deepened my relationship with my pets.
Absolutely. You know, it's a heart connection and lets you understand them better. And I think that does create a much deeper relationship.
Yeah. And it got me thinking about, you know, this level of communication and... All right, so how can I better do that? And we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, let's chat about ways that we can communicate better with our pets.
That'd be great.
All right,
sounds
wonderful.
Good.
We'll take a short break. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Radio Network, and we'll be right back. Hi, and welcome. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Network, and here to help with all aspects of honoring our pets and our relationship with them. Honor Your Pet understands. Pets are our family and honors our relationship with them and all they give. The website is pethonoring.com and the email address is pets@pethonoring.com. Let me know what you need and how I can help. All right, we're back. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Radio Network. We are here with Cindy Smith, professional animal communicator. And Cindy, tell us... you know, how can we do this? You said we all have this ability, and, you know, even just a little bit on a day-to-day basis, what can we do?
Well, I think that the biggest thing that we can recognize is that words create images. And okay. if you will talk to your animal, play with this concept. Just talk to them as if they're understanding everything you're saying. And use words that describe either the circumstances as they are or the behavior you want. So an example of that would be you're taking your dog to the vet. Instead of pretending like you're not going to the vet and getting your dog in the car and driving to the vet and then arriving in the parking lot and saying, "You'll be okay. No one will hurt you." First of all, your dog was kind of anxious because he didn't know where he was going, and then he arrives at the vet and is assured that no one will hurt him. But our mind only creates an image, whatever our image of hurt is in that moment. So right. instead, you could give your dog a heads up. You could say, "We're going to go to the vet tomorrow, and your favorite vet is going to listen to your heart, look in your eyes, push your little tummy to see how it feels, and you let them know if anything is tender. And then we'll both come back home." So that way you've told your animal what to expect, how to behave, and then the reassurance that they're coming home with you. That allows them to have a much more relaxed visit with their vet.
Yeah.
Another example, I'm sorry, Lee, I interrupted you.
No, go.
I was going to say, another example that I have found really helpful for my people with horses is the horses want to know how long the trailer ride is, where are we going, and when are we coming back? So instead of being put in the trailer and driven away with no clue what's going on, you give them that information ahead of time and they know how many nights you're going to spend at the arena and that they're coming back with you. I think it's often just to have an idea of what's about to happen to them when they're not in control of everything that's happening to them.
Yeah, and I think that was number one piece of advice when I was speaking with another animal communicator. She said that they just want to know what's going on.
Yeah, imagine how out of control their life is if we just kind of scurry around and then grab them as an afterthought and take them somewhere when we could be letting them know what the plan is. It's an easy thing to do.
Yeah, and I use that on a day-to-day basis. Like if, you know, I'm going to take Maddie for a walk at the river, I tell her that in words, but I also use the image. I picture the river, you know, the river walk
yes.
that we're going to go to. You know, so I picture that and I picture going to the store, and when I go out of town, you know, I tell her I'm going to go out of town and I see the sunset, you know, like two times, and then I see myself coming back home. And then, you know, she goes, okay, you know.
Well, that's perfect because your final image is not only have you given her how many nights you're going to be gone, but you have that image of you returning. I think that's a good parting shot to say to your animals whenever you leave the house. You stay here, I'll be back. That image is
right.
of you returning.
Right. Right. So we can, you know, our listeners out there can practice, you know, saying the words and telling, you know, the pet what's going on, but also using the image.
Yes, the image is important, and that's one of the things about saying to describe the behavior you want. That kind of requires you to think about the image you're trying to send.
Yeah. Yeah,
saying no jumping, you might say feet on the floor because that creates the image that you're asking for.
Right. Right. I think that's important to be cognizant of that and go, okay, you know, what image and what the pet is going to relate to.
Yeah, what am I trying to say in this moment? You know, it really requires clarity on our part before we give them the information.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I also heard that, you know, the pairing the feeling with the scenario or the communication helps.
Yes, I think it's very important to present the feeling that it's all going to be okay also. So we're
right.
going to go do this, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And, again, I think a few hints about what you'd like them to do, so that then when the situation's over and you're returning home, you are able to give them a couple of specific compliments. I was so proud of you when you were very careful with that little toddler and let her walk beside you.
Right.
Specific compliments rather than good dog. That really doesn't create much of an image other than that you love them, which is fine. But if you're
right.
especially working on behavioral changes, I feel it's nice to compliment the specific behavior.
Right. Right. And then, yeah, and I also heard that pairing it with that feeling of being proud or...
yes.
Really
exactly.
Because they feel that.
Yes, they do. I mean, they're so resonant with us. They are watching our emotions and mirroring those often.
Yeah. Yep, wonderful. Okay, great. Well, we're going to take a short break, and we will continue learning more about animal communication with professional animal communicator Cindy Smith. We'll be right back. Hi, and welcome. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Network, and here to help with all aspects of honoring our pets and our relationship with them. Honor Your Pet understands that pets are our family and honors our relationship with them and all they give. The website is pethonoring.com, and the email address is pets@pethonoring.com. Let me know what you need and how I can help. All right, welcome back. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Ellie Merriweather, and we are chatting with professional animal communicator Cindy Smith, and we are learning so much about what animal communication is and, you know, how we can do a better job with our pets on a day-to-day basis. And some of the things that we chatted about were using images. You know, imagine or have that image of the scene or place or where you're going to go, as well as the feeling. And we can practice that ourselves. And when we need more, we can try an animal communication session. And tell us some of the best reasons for someone using animal communication, Cindy.
I think that when you find there's confusion, whether it's confusion on your part or your animal's part. So I do a lot of kind of end-of-life discussions. It's when we don't really trust our instincts on whether our animal is in pain or are they distressed in some way, are they worried. And so it's nice to have clarity about how they're feeling physically as well as emotionally, to be able to offer them some choices in treatment plans. I mean, that's not necessarily just end of life, but just to let the animals know, we've got three options here. Which would you prefer? Or if you're having difficulty getting someone to take a pill or getting someone to do a certain behavior that's necessary for their health, it's often helpful to let them know the reason for this behavior on your part.
Right.
So lots of times with behavioral changes, so let's say we're talking to a person and a horse and they're having some confusion in the horse's performance. Often, if we explain to the horse what we're trying to get them to do, they can make that change. It was just that they didn't understand clearly what was being asked of them.
What they were supposed to do, right. They didn't understand.
Yeah, for example, here's one, a horse who was jumping and he kept hitting his hoof right on the top of the rail on the jump. And his person suggested to him he just needed to tuck his feet up a little more under his chest, in the direction of his chest, and he would clear those jumps. The very next time they went out, he did that and was successful.
I love to get
feedback. Yeah, I will get my clients to send me a quick email to note that improvement that was made so that I can then get whoever it was back on the line and say, your person is bragging about you. I hear you did the perfect jump today. And also, that reinforces that they did get it right.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like animals want to do what we ask them to do. It's just that they often can't quite decipher what we're trying to get them to do.
Right.
So behavioral changes is one great use. The kind of clarity about medical treatment or end of life. And again, I'm not a vet. I don't diagnose. What I can do is give the person some information that they might relay to their vet. Or sometimes I get vet referrals with an animal that they've gone the whole medical route, and it is an emotional issue that they just need clarity about.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think that's another good understanding is that a lot of animal communicators tap into that, the energy of the physical too. So when the pet says, you know, I'm having some arthritis or my stomach's upset, then, you know, that's important information that they wouldn't otherwise be able to communicate to their person.
Exactly. With kitties, lots of times it's a tooth issue, but the cats tend to be so stoic that their person hasn't noticed that their mouth hurts, and then when they go in for the dental, there it was. It was an abscessed tooth that was causing the problem.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. I was just thinking about my my cat, Xander. We went to the vet, and they said, okay, he's going to need, you know, dental surgery. And so I had a session to tell him that. And you know, he asked a lot of questions about it, and he's like, oh, okay. And then he said, you know, I'm not happy about it, but I'll do it.
I love it.
It was really cute. We were able to share with him, okay, this is needed because this will prevent other problems. And then he said, okay. Yeah.
Right. And how much nicer that was for him than for you to pick him up, put him in the carrier, take him to the vet, and leave him there. And he didn't know what the purpose was. I'm sure he was much more relaxed knowing what was going on and why.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times we just don't think about it. Because it's not our world. I mean, our pets are in our world, but, you know, if we just think about it from their perspective, then we go, oh, okay, yeah, I can try this. I can try to better communicate using images and feelings and, you know, really help our pets have a more comfortable and life.
Well, Lee, you just hit a very important point. It's being willing to look at it from their perspective.
Yeah.
I think that's the key piece in everybody being happy. And then once you realize from their perspective, they would like more information, as you give them information, they're giving you information back. And it really opens that channel of communication with your animals when you are willing to just consider their perspective, their intelligence. Yeah, they have a lot to offer.
Yeah, I think it's a tremendous way of enhancing your relationship and really being a better pet parent with your pet. You know, when I was traveling, I had a job for a short period where I was traveling a lot, and during one of the sessions, the animal communicator said, you know, are you telling her you're going away and coming back? And I'm like, oh, you know, and that's when it all started. And, you know, her behavior just changed dramatically once, you know, I started saying, okay, I'm coming back. You know, she's like, okay.
I bet it did, because it deepens the connection, and it also just lets their life be more relaxed.
Yeah. Well, Cindy, what do you want people most to know about animal communication?
I think to just invite them to give it a try, to begin talking to their animals in words that create images, share feelings. It can't hurt, so why not give it a try? And you can do little things like test it by being in one room and the other room and mentally inviting your dog to come in and see you. And then when they do, say, oh, thank you. It's a really easy thing to get some backup that you're actually connecting with them. Offer them two treats and ask them to show you which one they like, a mental image of which one they like, and then put them down at their level and see which one they choose and see if you got the message.
Yeah.
It's a fun game for the animals, and you can also let them know you're trying to learn how to do this. Would they please help you?
Ah, I like that.
Yes. I have a client who is a great little dog who is aggressive, and he said, listen, I'm going to need some help with this changing my behavior, but let me tell you how to do it. And he gave her the whole training plan and then jumped on board, and they resolved that issue.
Wow.
Yeah, so they have a lot to offer and a lot of opinions.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's something, you know, for us all to think about and to play around with. And if someone wants to find out more about you and get a hold of you for your services, where do they go?
Animalsmith.com. It's think like a blacksmith, but animal. And actually, my website, I'd like to say, I have a tips page, and I have a lot of information that animals have given me over the time. You know, what are the most requests of dogs or cats or horses? And I try to use my website as an informational source. So great client comments of many different ways people have used the services, as well as great animal photos that they sent me. So it's kind of a fun site. That's my intention with that.
Yeah, I love the tips page. It talks about crates, overuse of crates, or guidelines for that, and top 10 things your pet, I'm sorry, your dog wants you to know.
Yeah. It's really fun to be able to share that kind of information.
Yeah,
and then
wonderful.
I offer classes in receiving information. That's a different kind of technique than delivering. I have a little CD that talks about how to deliver information in a language your animals will understand. And then I also teach classes on how to do the listening part.
Oh, great.
And those can be a lot of fun. They're experiential classes.
Yeah, so if someone wants just an intro, they can get your CD, they can take classes, or they can just, you know, bop around your website and look at the tips and just explore a little bit more. And that's animalsmith.com.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Well, Cindy, thank you so much for being here and sharing your knowledge and this wonderful topic of animal communication. It was just a delight to have you here.
Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you.
Great. And I hope we can do more in the future. Thank you very much, everyone, for joining us today. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Ellie Merriweather, and join us next show. Thank you very much. Thank you for joining us. Please visit pethonoring.com or email me at pethonoring.com. We'll be right back.